Are you still on the ayahuasca making no, Aaron Rodgers a better lover question?
We are cutting edge here. So we talked about Aaron Rodgers lovemaking yesterday, but on the shows that I did today, Get Up and First Take, we finally got around to Aaron Rodgers lovemaking. So it's fresh in my mind. It's the last thing he says. It's like, it makes you a better football player, better leader, better person, and also a better lover. And is that for you to say?
Well, I mean, Spencer, clearly you better be grinding the All 22. Like, these are things that should be studied. There should be clauses and contracts about this.
I think maybe if we accept it, and you have to hear the language as it's used, not as you hear it necessarily. What he may be saying, y'all, is lover in the spiritual sense.
Oh,
right?
I think just a maybe lover of people.
And then, well, yes, and as it for your significant other, right? Like, that's, okay, I think, I probably you. What that's probably but, what he's saying, because I really, I mean, not that he wouldn't go into the X's and O's of how that might be, but I think
or hold on, or X's and X's, or O's and O's.
Absolutely,
that's true. Yeah. That's
it
true.
Can be all, yeah.
And so, throw some Z's and Y's in there too, man.
Yeah,
I'm not
please
judging.
Do. Yeah, you are. We give you the full range of alphabet and numbers.
Absolutely.
Menu time. Oh, welcome to the fake TV show where we debate nothing. It's called Debatable. We're on the internet. You guys are watching us now. You enjoy this. That's Spencer Hall, the smartest man when it comes to just about every topic. That's Pablo Torre. I like to mispronounce his name as much as possible to make him uncomfortable.
Very good. I have failed.
No, this is your no. You're on punishment right
lost
now.
Lost my name.
You're on
lost
punishment.
My goddamn name.
Okay. You're on punishment. You can't show up late all shows and still be the host. You can't.
What are you talking about? I was here
I'm
on
only
time.
Mad at Pablo, right? I'm only mad because he's trying to out cowlick me, and I will not be out cowlicked. This is not disorderly is my thing. This is too much on one screen, Pablo.
Yeah, I sorry again for all of our listeners and viewers. I was in the shower. I was cleaning myself as I want
this
to give my
Tom
best
Coughlin,
self to you.
This is a Tom Coughlin operation. If you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. Matt Stafford, what about him?
So, wow. I have a question off the top before we get to Matt Stafford. Mm-hmm. How do you guys think
does Pablo respect
the
us?
Went?
The answer is no.
How do you guys think those first 2 minutes went?
Outstanding.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Our to give the Giants metaphor, our computer guy is here to tell us what we did wrong. I'm sorry, computer guy. I'm so sorry.
I just want
sorry.
Us to grind a little tape and do better. Let's do better on this. Let's talk about
I missed the grinding. I missed the grinding joke with Aaron Rodgers. Oh. Now, in retrospect.
Yeah, good joke.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, that's why we do film.
Yep.
Oh. Okay. Question. How concerning is Matt Stafford's elbow injury for the Rams?
So are we like in yet another Rams fake retirement zone, or where are we with the story? Because all I hear about is all these Rams threatening to retire then not because they're too hurt or whatever. Is this a serious thing? I've been told it's like tendonitis and a quote unquote baseball injury, but I still, like Sean McVay maybe, don't actually know what that means.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is serious and concerning, but I'm happy to see that they are addressing it now. So your quarterback is on the wrong side of 30, or the right side, depending on how you believe. But as far as throwing footballs are concerned, no one is that great late into their age. And he threw more last year than he ever has, or he played in more games last year than he ever has. And so this is concerning. But I'd be more concerned, like, given football's general history and the way coaches behave, is if you got an issue, they don't care about it. And they throw you out there and it makes it worse. So, like, I think they're doing the best possible thing they can do right now is to try to rest him now when his throws don't matter. Because he is still throwing 7-on-7, I understand. He's not doing as much. But try to preserve those throws, because if it's a baseball injury, you start thinking about a pitch count. And let's not waste these pitches in August, because presumably they want him to still be throwing pitches late in January and into February.
Let's focus on the positives here, if any. And it's because naturally the people we want to be happy our coaches. That's our number one priority on the show. We just live to make coaches happy. All we want to do as a coach, as a football coach, what do we want to do? Run the ball. That's what 90% of football coaches want to do, because running the ball is low risk and easy, and it sets up so many other wonderful things. Run the ball more. Like, it does, by the way, seem really abnormal for a quarterback to have this specific type of elbow injury. And I say that as somebody who has listened to football players have every imaginable injury possible. So when a football coach says that it's a little bit unusual to see an injury on a quarterback, the person who is the most hunted person on the field, then yeah, it's weird.
Wait, I have two quick thoughts. Number one, it's funny you mentioned running backs, because Sean McVay is sitting here now wondering, like, do I have to handle this like Todd Gurley now? Like, do I have to handle this in a way where I have to rest my dude because he might be at the end of the line? The second thing I want to point out that I noticed is that there was a card before this card, Alabaster. Please put that card up about what was supposed to be an injection. Come on.
Man.
Put it back
so,
up.
So that's judgy exactly on us. Why, man.
Yeah. Because it's a funny typo, because he received an injectino. That's just a funny typo.
That's Italian.
Oh,
that's Italian.
Gosh.
Yes, I mean, Gorlami of injections is the injectino. Gianni Injectino is the name of the doctor.
That's outstanding. So let's talk about who benefits from this. You might be surprised, but I believe... No, not the division opponents that they play against. No, not Wofford. Isn't that his name? Wofford, the backup quarterback.
Oh, John. Wofford.
You know who really benefits from this? Allen Robinson. Because Allen Robinson probably showed up on this team that had an established, effective quarterback, and he was like, huh? What's this? I'm accustomed to having guys miss me wildly and to not throw me the ball and to get sacked when I'm wide open. Allen Robinson is in his element right now. He's like, yes, now we're talking.
Yes,
the type
quarterbacks
of bad quarterback
who plausibly
play that I thrive on.
Have tendonitis. This is the Jaguars, baby.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. To put this in F1 terms, by the way, this is Lewis Hamilton being given a bad car. He has no idea what to do with it because he's had good cars this whole time, right? This is, by the way, the most F1 content I will work into this, barring some sort of disaster later on this season.
God, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Do we torture this metaphor, Dominique? We talk about how, you know, the luxury automobiles that the Rams have all bought are all, how are they looking? How are we feeling in the garage right now about the Rams? Are we expecting they're just going to do it again? Like, seriously, like McVay is weirdly honest about this. I don't know why. And I'm wondering, is he trying to lower a bar? Like, is that what's happening right now?
I don't think so. Like, I think this is a real thing that they should be concerned about. But I think, like I mentioned before, I like that they are being proactive as you can be about that. So are they going to run it back? Like, probably not, because no one does. It's really hard. The playoffs are random. But I do think that this team is still pretty well stocked, and they're still in the lesser of the two conferences. So they're going to have a tough time with the 49ers in their division, because they just stink against the 49ers, honestly. Like, that is one number that it appears that the 49ers have is the Rams. They have their number quite clearly, and they dial it whenever they want to. I think the addition of what's the linebacker they got? They got a really good line. Oh, Bobby Wagner. The addition of Bobby Wagner, I think, helps a lot in that 49ers matchup, because Kyle Shanahan is notorious for play action and exploiting, I was going to say dumb, but that's the wrong word, aggressive linebackers. Bobby Wagner is one of the smartest.
Linebackers with the behavior of a dumb linebacker.
So Bobby Wagner is one of the smartest and best at reading play action in the game. And I think that's going to help their defense, which already has other Hall of Famers on it, and Jalen Ramsey and some guy named Aaron. So it's really hard for me to imagine that this team is going to be bad. Combine all that with a coach and a culture and all-in attitude that it feels like is hard to replicate and hard to fake, and also very valuable. Like, I don't feel terribly pessimistic about this team because of all of those things. And Matt Stafford, the man threw a no-look pass in the biggest game of his life at the biggest moment of his life. So I don't know what that counts for. I don't know what that counts for, but that should count for something.
Well, does it count? I mean, Spencer, you know, I recall also that Stafford played literally with broken bones, like in his back, like he had fractured vertebrae. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Does the toughness of this guy factor into how you feel about this, having watched him for a long time now since he played at Georgia?
I don't know what quarterback or what football player, for that matter, is close to 90 or 80% most of the time in season. There's just so many nagging injuries they play with and manage. They said he had this condition last season. You know, I feel like in a year we'll find out that, you know, yeah, he couldn't feel his arm for the last 8 games. You know, he was throwing with numb hands and somehow won a Super Bowl. That would not shock me given the resting pain tolerance of these players. On a real tangential level, they're going to miss Andrew Whitworth. Yeah. Right, you don't lose a retiring lineman like a great like Andrew Whitworth, and it won't affect you. It will affect you somewhat, if only in the chemistry of that offensive line and how things move. I do feel pretty good about this, though. If worse comes to worse, and you get a condition where somehow even the sky-high pain threshold of an NFL quarterback is overcome by the inability to actually perform. This is a system where Jared Goff was successful. And I don't want to say like, oh, wow, Jared Goff is you know, the negative end of this. But yeah. I will put it this way. He's a quarterback who has to be managed and it has to be built around and has to be put in situations to make you successful. He's not going to throw a no-look pass and it's going to work out well, right?
To be fair, I feel like Matt Stafford is also kind of he had a lot of turnovers last year. He's also kind of a quarterback that needs to be managed. He's like a better quarterback that needs to be managed, and which is fine. But it's what I think I want to take this conversation. You brought it up to the front door. Speaking of Andrew Whitworth's absence, I want to know what we feel about Noteboom, who is Andrew Whitworth's replacement at tackle. So, through the history, like the naming conventions of like surnames, like aren't they kind of like what your job was or something like that, right? That's kind of is like Shoemaker. If your last name is Shoemaker, like way down the line, somebody made shoes. His name is Noteboom. What's the etymology of that? Like what country do note booms come from? Is that just someone who like took really good notes and they were like, hey, you know that guy you weren't in class on Friday? Holla at note boom.
Is he like medieval Mike Dean, Spencer? Is he dropping sick bass lines underneath your Kanye track back in whatever?
Musical 400s? Notes. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, it could be like Captain 808, right?
Got a friend.
Look at that cameo.
That glistening cameo. So sweaty always.
He's a warm man. I would go ahead and suggest this, that Noteboom is Dutch. I'm going to say every time I hear a name and I can't believe it's real, I just assume it's Dutch. Okay? So here, I'm going to hit the... Yep, it is Dutch, and it means nut tree.
It gets better. It gets better. We're not going to do it, Pablo. We're not. We are going to show restraint.
We're not going to talk about how clearly Joseph Noteboom's ancestors were humping all sorts of trees.
No, we're not.
Literally.
We're not going to do it. We are done.
Laying wood. Literally.
They won't be able to recreate the Jared Goff system because they don't have Todd Gurley. And you're right, they did ease Todd Gurley. They like tried to play around Todd Gurley's injuries and his body later in his time there. But if you remember, Todd Gurley was the MVP of the whole league at one point, which is like a rarity for the modern running back.
Wait, did he really win an MVP? Did he actually?
I don't think so.
Come close?
I think he did not, but he should have been.
Alabaster's hand, as I asked that clarification, shook like he also could not feel it. That was terrifying.
He is the NFL Offensive Player of the Year. He was not offensive the MVP. Player.
That's what it was.
Who won MVP last year? Who did he steal it from? Or who stole it from him?
Brady. You know, the GOAT.
Oh, yeah.
Brady.
Yeah.
Classic.
You know who was second in the MVP that year?
Jared Goff.
You guys are going to hate it.
I know. It's Carson Wentz.
Carson Wentz. Yep.
Oh man,
I remember that.
Yeah. By the way, shouts out to fall practice reports because I got to read about I believe it was Montez Sweat yelling at Carson Wentz to throw the ball away as he was chasing him in practice, and Wentz ran out of And Wentz ran out of bounds.
Which is the equivalent of a bully actually saying, please stop hitting yourself, except he actually means it.
Please stop hitting yourself, yeah.
He actually means it, yeah.
What in the world is going on? So this is an ongoing thing that frustrates the hell out of me.
Are we talking about the weird helmets? Are we about to talk about the weird giant helmets?
Nope,
else?
Okay. Nope, those don't frustrate me. What frustrates me is the level of intelligence and intellect that we ascribe to offensive people, quarterbacks, coordinators, all of them. Like, y'all really be thinking that they are out here splitting the atom. Like, Carson Wentz just ran out of bounds. A D lineman who likely never played quarterback in his life was in that moment, recognized what to do, and he was like, nah, I ain't gonna do that. I'm gonna do the worst possible thing.
That's much a sweat QB coach.
It just generally frustrates me, and I know you guys aren't doing it, but like,
it's a great point.
If you are asking someone, and not even just naked IQ, which is how intelligent you are when you don't have clothes on, but not even your IQ, but your football IQ, your football IQ, I would guess that if you asked a regular fan, like, rank football IQ, Montez Sweat or Carson Wentz. Average fan, Carson Wentz, higher football IQ. They also would probably think that he has a higher regular IQ. But clearly, Montez Sweat understands how to play football better than Carson Wentz does, but it don't matter. I'm sorry. You know, it's a tangent. Where is the tangent?
You know who has a great naked IQ? Mr. Nuttree.
Okay.
You know what his job was?
Save us.
Dominique, all I was going to say is that this has been going on in Washington for literally 10 years now. In 2012, we had the stories about RG3 not being able to slide and Bryce Harper teaching him how to slide. Then we had Kirk Cousins kneeling on fourth downs and not being able to run out of bounds.
Man,
then we had an entire news story about Alex Smith and how they were just telling him to drop if anyone came into the backfield coming back from injury. And now we have Carson Wentz. This has been 10 years of this. The D-line is used to it and ready.
It's the incompetence of the federal government bleeding over into the football team's quarterbacks. They actually accomplished something recently. I'm sorry. They got a bill passed.
I don't think anyone who watched Carson Wentz play in Philly, especially Philly fans, is having any problem with our defensive players or smart conversation. Oh, I think they're totally fine with that. They're good with that.
I want a camera on Jim Irsay at all times. Whenever we're talking about Carson Wentz, like, Jim Irsay is going to be in a state of mind that is always entertaining. But then on top of it, it seems that no one hates Carson Wentz more than him. If you remember the story after they blew those games at the end of the season, like, Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, was the guy who was like, nah, this a man who is comfortable with many experiments looked at this and was like, this experiment? No more. This is a little too wild of a roller coaster for a man who got arrested with a bunch of pills in his car.
For a man whose veins most resemble a roller coaster. Yeah.
He was like, nah, I can't get on this ride. This is too much for me. Get him out of town after 1 year. Poor Montez.
That's Jim Irsay saying the beast is too loose, which is how you know the beast is too loose.
Like, I need some stability somewhere. Oh, gosh. All right. I don't know. Do we have any more? Well, I was going to say about Matt Stafford, but somehow we are not on Matt Stafford. What's next on the menu? LeBron?
It's time to talk about LeBron and the Lakers. We got reports that they had productive extension talks. LeBron's up for 2 years, almost $100 million. My question to you, there's a Bronny looming. There's free agency looming. There's a brittle Anthony Davis looming. Russell Westbrook's on the team. Where do you think LeBron will play after this year?
So, quick note, because you just did something that we need to stop doing, which is you mentioned Bronny and you didn't mention Bryce. I'm going to filibuster for a little bit. We are collectively, so you can find us a photo, a video of what Bryce looks like now.
Yeah.
Dude,
I saw him dunking
is
yesterday.
Awesome.
A couple days ago.
He is taller than Bronny. He is now my favorite subplot in the LeBron James story. Will he now play long enough to play with Bryce? Because Bryce, if you're a dad, you know that Bryce is really the one.
Yeah.
And Bronny may not be.
I had an older brother. Like, there's actual research behind the younger sibling. always being the better athlete, like Serena. That's there's like actual, I should look it up somewhere, but there is actual research behind that that suggests that he is the one. He is bigger.
Yeah.
And I
he's a shooter, is what has always been the legend of Bryce, because I follow his family like they're the Royals. But yeah,
I assume the nerd in you, Pablo, also appreciates that there are pictures of him in spectacles, which
he has those goggles, those Korean goggles, to my heart. Yeah.
Yeah, this is what older children do. We serve as the negative example so that the younger siblings can learn from it. We make mistakes so that you can become, so that you can achieve Super Saiyan mode.
Yeah, yes. I was fortunate. Another thing that as a younger brother, my brother's 2 years older than me, and he took me everywhere with him to play sports with him. So it was a lot of, like, when I was playing with kids my age, it was quite an advantage. And I imagine that since Bryce is doing the same thing, he goes to NBA practices all the time, he might have a little bit of an advantage. He is the best player in modern basketball. I guess we could quibble about that, but he is certainly a very good basketball player to have around, giving you some tips. And he has the shield of his older brother.
That's right.
The one we're always talking about.
Right. Incidentally, yes, we could quibble with this, Dominique. Yeah, we should pioneer. Can we be the first people to argue that LeBron James is not actually the greatest player of modern times?
The
timeline on this story, to the point that we were just referencing, right? The inexhaustible coal mine that is arguing about LeBron James. Mm. What happened here really is that yesterday, he now officially can sign this extension. He has until June 30th of 2023 to sign it. Real big ass window. But you know what's inside of that window? All of our faces screaming. And that's what it's going to be like for about 6 months.
By the way, you've lived right. If you are approaching the end of your athletic career and you're looking on the table at a year to sign a 2-year $97.1 million. I mean, congrats, buddy.
Yeah,
like, I know we say a lot of things about LeBron, but like, in thinking about this, when you go, okay, well, when does retirement come up? Where is he going to spend the rest of his career? Are family concerns more of an issue? Because they really are at this point. You know, he can do whatever he wants. My question is, where are you going to move that isn't LA for all that? Where are you going to move where you're not going to be more comfortable, where you're not going to have greater access to all of the media and sort of cultural stuff that you might want to do, right? Like, where,
just
what's
living,
a better
though.
Spot for that?
Just living as a superstar. LA is one of very few places. I can't think of any other, even in New York. Like,
I was going to say,
no, New York,
Dominique,
New York is
New York's
not
funny, but it's sort of like the argument for New York is, wow, you can be a celebrity and walk around, people won't bother you.
No,
people are going
true.
To bother LeBron James.
Yeah, you can't. No, I get approached in the streets in New York. Not enough for it to be annoying, but New York is a place that is so, like, there is segregation in New York, obviously, but it is so integrated in class because you have to cross different parts of the city.
Everybody's smashed up into each other.
Yeah, so it's very different in LA, where they all live together. All the rich and famous people live together. And and they go in their rich and famous communities, and it is a different existence. And the people who work in those communities are comfortable with that. Move to New York, that is not the same thing. And there is no other city in the world where LeBron doesn't show up and automatically get annoyed. So if we're talking about a place to live, and of course his professional aspirations after basketball exist in LA also, although he probably could have been the greatest football player ever if he wanted to do
also
that.
Well,
what do you get if you move to New York and you're wealthy? You get top cube. That's it. Like, here, I get to live in a cube on the top, right? How big's my pool? My pool's like a puddle. Like, I never stop laughing at New York pool party pics because they're all sitting there with their feet in the same bucket. If you live in LA, what do you
I
get?
Have no response
I got
for this.
3 acres. I got a gorgeous.
You should.
I got, would you like a tennis court? Like, the quality of life. New York,
no,
LA
New York
is trash. It's
New York is
trash.
Like, do you want to live on the first car of a vertical Snowpiercer train? As long as I don't have to encounter the children underneath grinding their bones to make our engine go. Yeah, I can get down with that.
Yeah, the life.
Go ahead.
The elite, the life for the elites in both places are pretty good. But I would say that if you live in New York, you should not be throwing pool parties. Never. Like, it's just not something you do. It's like, I'm not going to go to Texas to try to get the best sushi that I've ever had. Like, if you're a pool party dude, LA is where you need to be.
I have lived in New York City for 36 years, 37 next month. I have been invited to zero pool parties. So that's a me problem, maybe. Yeah.
Being wealthy in New York is still so messed up that you can be rich and still get shamed into wearing pants. That's ridiculous. Go be rich. Go be rich and American, all right? And not live in fake Europe. And go live a true rich American's life in Los Angeles, okay?
Oh, man. Go ahead, Alabaster. Oh, I like that. Interjectino.
I do have one question about LeBron, and that is, to get back to the original root of this, it kind of seems like things are irreparably broken with the Lakers, but he just really likes living in L.A. How do you think that this is going to sort of play out? Do you think we'll know more at the end of August whether or not if he doesn't take the extension? Do you think that's how significant is that?
So the backbone of this actual speculative argument is that the Cleveland Cavaliers, let's just call them by name, the Cleveland Cavaliers are out there with a lot of cap space. They have good players, right? They have good young players. And LeBron has been there twice before already. And so if you're LeBron James, what you have to make clear to the public, even though you probably have a sense of wanting to stay in LA this whole time anyway, is if I don't get what I want in LA, I'm out of here. And the degree to which he makes that messy, does that mean he's demanding Kyrie Irving? Does that mean he's demanding other stuff we don't know about? That's where he doesn't want to. Brian Windhorst told me this on ESPN Daily. He doesn't want to be the shadow GM. He doesn't want to be what I call him all the time. What he wants to be is a guy not getting blamed for signing Russell Westbrook while still wanting to sign Kyrie Irving, which is a recipe to be blamed for something new.
It depends on how
complexity.
It depends on how much or how comfortable he is with the potential that he could be a villain. Because he can go back to Cleveland, and I think he could do no wrong there. They're happy with whatever LeBron presents. Somehow he's won a championship in LA. And still, it feels like the Lakers fans have higher expectations for him. Winning a championship has not earned him the kind of credibility or the leniency that you would expect it would.
Because Dominique, because Cleveland, you know what Cleveland. Spencer,
no, I'm not asking why.
But it's funny. No, I'm just your point makes something even clearer to me, which is that winning in LA is not. Mm-hmm. It's a very different standard given everybody else who played in that team, done stuff in that city. Very much so.
It is, but it's also different because the person involved clearly makes his own reality at this point. You've seen. LeBron is the most unbothered human being when it comes to what other people expect of him. I'm not saying that as some sort of vague character sketch. No, he said it. He's demonstrated it. I don't see him ever going back to Cleveland. I don't see him ever leaving LA. He's comfy. Like, the only move I could see him making if the Lakers really pitched a fit would be to just say, okay, I'll work on the other side of town. I'll work for the Clippers. Yeah. That's it. Like, I don't really imagine. What at this point, his incentives are so weird and so hard to understand, because what does he need?
And nobody's been this. Like, it's hard to think about incentives and motivation for a character that we've never seen before. And I just want to take this moment right here, because Pablo, you said it at the top about him being this kind of inexhaustible resource for us in sports media. Like, particularly, I was going to say especially the people who hate on him, but particularly the people who hate on him. Like, what a coal mine of bottomless greatness, the LeBron James, and he is even offering up his children for us to have something to talk about.
Yes,
somehow
we're about to
interesting. Like, goodness,
we're
gracious,
about
LeBron,
to.
Thank you. Thank
we're
you.
About can to I, frack the hell out of his kids. Yes.
Can I say this? Interjectino.
Thank you. That's how it's supposed to be said the whole time. It's just like all of us. I feel like all the networks like just owe LeBron a big ass check. Because he has been the employee at ESPN that has not gotten paid and has even, he did the decision. Like, goodness gracious, I use coal mine specifically because it does also add some really gross stuff in the atmosphere, but that's not the coal's fault.
So speaking of you know, stuff that he did to fuel the fire. It is the 1 year anniversary of this tweet that I want to read you guys. Keep talking about my squad. Our personnel ages, the way he plays, he stays injured. We're past our time in this league, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do me one favor, please. And I mean, please. Prayer emoji. Keep that same narrative energy when it begins. That's all I ask. Hashtag, well, thank you, Crown.
I mean, they were right. They went out and then they won a title. That all happened. No, that all happened.
That was before this season, I think, right?
Yes, before yeah. this. That's, no, this is exactly what happened. Don't you get, just like, yes, no, see? That's what would have happened if other things hadn't happened, because this man makes his own reality, right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I'm sure there is an alley in LeBron's head where he thinks they could have gotten a championship if.
And he did the thing where he's like, I'm responsible for this championship because I mentored these young players to success.
And,
Steph Curry.
And it's reasonable.
Steph Curry is my mentee.
It's also reasonable, though, because, like, when has LeBron James not been in the finals? Like, given his track record, I kind of understand. And Alabaster, you said he peed on the fire. Is his pee gasoline? Because I thought peeing on the fire was an attempt to subdue it. That just charged it up.
I said fueled the fire. Fuel.
No, you didn't. You said pee.
Well, then there was a Freudian slip.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's not fun.
I feel like both of you guys are Freudian slipping now.
Maybe I heard it wrong.
In a puddle of metaphorical pee.
Maybe I wanted you to say pee. That was not fun. I hate being wrong.
You did say my favorite Foxworth line I have heard on this show yet, which was, it's not the Coles' fault. That is my favorite thing you have ever said on this show.
It is both incredible and exactly the thing that Dominique's racial critics would accuse him of saying, which is incredible on that level too.
Oh man, I have lots of racial critics. I got some more on First Take earlier today.
I haven't watched it, but I have no doubt.
Yeah.
I have no doubt.
I got some sexual critics too from my discussions on Get Up. I had a banner day.
Wow. Admitting you have sexual critics is a big milestone in Dominique Cox.
You could talk to Aaron Rodgers about that. Yeah.
I mean, that's the conversation. Obviously, I don't have actual sexual critics. That's like only champions over here.
Let's keep it going. We got some sound for you to listen to from someone with no sexual critics, and that's Cliff Kingsbury. And my question is,
there should be.
What are the chances calling plays was a valuable exercise for Kyler?
Oh, do we have sound or should we tell?
I just want to know that, hey, this ain't easy, you know? Like, every now and then, he starts shaking his head when I'm calling it in there. I'm like, all right, well, go ahead, big dog, you know?
This is your Gosling, really? Mm-hmm.
Just
to recap, this is your Gosling? Play it one more time, please.
He's not attractive.
This is your Gosling. This is your Gosling.
He is not cute.
Allegedly.
He's not. Yeah. Like, y'all are fawn over him.
That, hey,
look at it. It's not
easy,
cute.
You know? Like, every now and then, he starts shaking his head when I'm calling it in there. I'm like, all right, well, go ahead, big dog. You know?
Normal dude.
You gotta see him. I'm gonna defend his attractiveness here. You gotta see him in person. You know how some people are significantly more attractive in person? Uh-huh. That man is built. Like, first of all, he's bigger than you think. A lot of people, when they see quarterbacks, they go, oh, I'm about his height. No, you are not.
Yeah.
No, you are not. First of all, he's tall. Remember, the most attractive thing you can be in this world is tall. Doesn't matter if you look like a Home Depot skeleton walking out of your room. If you're tall, you're going to get calls. All right. Second of all, he's more attractive just in terms of like how he walks around in person. He's a big dude. He's a big, solid dude. I'm telling you, that's like 80% of it.
This is the most debatable debate
I actually want to debate.
As a not very tall person, slightly above average height, I would disagree with you. The most attractive thing you can be as a man is rich. Like, let's be honest.
I guarantee you
that rich dudes are doing a lot better. Well, Cliff Kingsbury, also rich. So, yeah.
I would also say this. I disagree with the whole he hasn't been calling plays thing, because I want to demonstrate with a visual aid. Kyler Murray has been calling the Madden Chiefs playbook. Okay. Can't quite see it there.
Yes.
But Kyler Murray evidently has been calling all kinds of plays. for exactly. a real long time, right? So I guarantee you, if you took the playbook and you just made it X, A, or B, and you put it in packages, he would be hitting buttons left and right. Let him call with the Madden playbook. Let him call Cardinals score 48 points a game. Guaranteed.
Yes, let him wear skins. Let him get in-game purchases that he can decorate his uniform with, and you'll get a whole different, way more comfortable quarterback.
Why don't we just give him XP? This is the thing. He's a gamer. Let's let him level up. Point. Like if I just say, hey man, listen, like that's 98 XP and we ranked you S plus on this, right? And you're top on the server, right? Don't call it a stat line. Say it's a server. Kyler Murray's gonna be like, yo, we're gonna see the greatest season since like Kurt Warner 2000. It's gonna be amazing.
Bidwell, I don't know, someone in charge, just go to the Arizona building, have a all hands meeting and say, hey everyone, shut the hell up. Like, just shut up. Shut up. You're not helping. Like, it just seems like an unnecessary, ridiculous quote. The one that we just had up there is like, Cliff Kingsbury wouldn't, and maybe I'm pulling it, maybe it's pulled out of context. Maybe it makes more sense. But Cliff Kingsbury wouldn't want to be the quarterback if Kyler Murray was the coach. What are you doing? Mm-hmm. On the heels of this stuff, the draft,
exactly.
the film watching contract. Like, this is, we had this conversation a couple of days ago about culture and culture in organizations. And we don't know how to measure it. We don't know how to define it. But I know when it's bad. It's bad when you got to, like, incentivize somebody to watch tape. And it's bad when your coach out here telling you what his quarterback can't do for him. It just seems pretty bad.
But it's also, Spencer, it's also the thing of, like, even if Cliff is making clear to all the media members that he is joking, are we really confident mm-hmm. that Kyler Murray is going to treat this like a joke? Like, we don't have any evidence that Kyler Murray gets the humor that Cliff Kingsbury is all about.
No, there's no evidence of that. And additionally, I will put this, to put Cliff's business out there a little bit. My favorite note about him as a player, Mike Leach said that he had to get him to throw down the field. Right? We think of Cliff Kingsbury as this, like, you know, blazing guns, all out kind of dude. When he was at Texas Tech, he had to be coaxed into this. One time, Leach asked him to throw on 3rd and 10. He asked him to throw for vert. He asked him to throw all go routes to go, you know, 3rd and 10. And he checked down and threw it to the running back. So he brought him back to the sidelines and on 4th and 10, called it again. And when he called it again, he threw it. They did a comeback for the first down, and Kingsbury ran to the sideline, angry, like visibly angry. Goes, fine. Are you happy now? Right? So this kind of like this kind of bravado to me. Gosh. Is, you know, yes, he's evolved as a person, but I like to point out that at one point he too was a quarterback with issues.
Wait, him? Cliff Kingsbury secretly just wanted to throw 4 horizontals. Does explain a lot about the Cardinals' offense. 4 horse, which is a different abbreviation.
We were supposed to put some numbers on this. No, it's not Alabaster. Sorry, numbers. I don't know.
4%, given the story that Spencer just told, is what I'll go with. Doesn't seem very valuable to make fun of your quarterback and hope that he agrees. Yeah.
10. I don't know. I just like that number. It's a good one.
Very good.
I'm going to say 100% as long as it was color-coded in Y, A, B, and X.
I love
it. Do that. And if he could flip the play by holding the trigger, right? If he could flip it, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cliff has to just be like, Alabaster, Cliff has to just be like, look, just think of me as Ask Madden, okay? Sometimes you're going to get tired of picking the play. Just pretend I'm Ask Madden.
I see an interjectino coming, but I do have one question for our actual football player with experience doing these things. Mm. What do you think of the idea of if you let quarterbacks call plays on the field? Like, if you gave them, you can, maybe it's the whole playbook, maybe it's just a handful of plays. What if you went back to like Kenny Stabler era? I walk up, I look at, and I do it. Because we all talk about Peyton Manning doing that, but like, are the results mixed depending on who's doing it?
I'm sure the results would be mixed depending on who's doing it. I think that is the best case scenario, honestly, is you have a quarterback who understands defenses well enough, understands the game well enough that he does not have to go to the sideline, that he's prepared on the field, because it eliminates a lot of the advantages that defenses have with the substitutions and the play change. If you are able to stay out of the huddle, you force the defenses into more simple looks.
Yep.
You make it more difficult for them to adjust.
You make it more
Madden. Yeah, you make it more difficult for substitutions because on the football field, if you notice, D linemen substitute, secondary players never substitute. They never come in and out. So, and on the offensive side of the ball, receivers go in and out occasionally, but the offensive line never goes in and out. So this goes back to bring it all the way back to your first point at the top of the show is what do coaches want to do? They want to run the ball. It gets easier to run the ball when you have a group that is comfortable working together on the field for an entire series, going against a defensive line that has to be forced out there, but is accustomed to getting a playoff here and there. So all in all, I think it makes it a lot easier, or like it's a lot more effective if you can keep the decision-making power as close to, I mean, this goes back to like, we can make war analogies where in modern wars against more disparate units, it's much more effective to have the decision-making power much closer to the people that are going to execute the decision. You have a disadvantage when there's a guy far away trying to make a decision for 37 mm-hmm. different battalions, which is the same thing. We like to make war analogies in football. It's the same thing here. If you have someone on the field that can make those decisions, he will inevitably, like Peyton Manning, they only ran like 5 to 10 plays. That's it. They just kept you on the field, and he would find out what coverage you were in, and then he would pick out of those 5 to 10 plays which ones work best.
All right, Alabaster. Let's move on to Jimmy.
So, back to my original point about how you guys think all these offensive coaches are so bleeping smart. They're not. The best to ever do it. 5 plays. Let's go out there and execute the hell out of these 5 plays. It's not about being a genius or an atom splitting mega mind.
Alabaster's, to be fair, five really good plays. 5 really cool plays.
Alabaster's trying to get us out of this topic before we talk about drone strikes. So
I just wanted I was directing us the whole time to the funnier part that you know, very pejoratively, Cliff Kingsbury called Kyler Murray "Big Dog," which just made me laugh hysterically.
There's no way that Kyler Murray is appreciative of
call the plays, Big Dog.
Yeah, that is so messed up. Even if you're not short, it's pretty mean. But the third thing that comes to mind when you talk about Kyler Murray is his height, then calling him Big Dog feels even worse.
Let me ask you this question, though. Is there anybody who has been called Big Dog who's like, wow, I really appreciate you recognizing me for the bigness of
my dog?
My dog, yeah.
I feel like Big Dog is not pejorative in most settings.
No.
Yeah.
Most of the time, like, I think
I feel it's so in my mind, it's always sarcastic.
Nah, it's not. See, this is the difference between being really, really close to football and like covering football. There's a lot of times when you don't know somebody's name, you're at training camp. What up, Big Dog? That's it. It's no disrespect. It's because this person is 6'5 and 310 pounds. What the hell else am I going to call you? I don't know your name. Yeah. You don't got a jersey on for me to call your number. You walking past them in the hallway. What up, Big Dog? Big Dog is mostly a respectful term. Thanks, Big Dog.
That's why I come to this show.
Let's move on to this last one real quick. We have 2 pieces of sound for you to listen to. First of all, Jerry Jones, then Jimmy Johnson. But my question to you, what are the chances Jimmy Johnson has ever sniveled?
Jerry, what a great verb.
I respect you. But I'm going to say this. It seems very petty of what's going on between you and Jimmy from the standpoint that he's in that ring of honor. Because when you think about the Hall of Fame and you think about those championships, I'm just saying that's how it comes off to people.
How I do that, what I do it with, I get to make that decision. And it isn't at the end of the day all tailored around whether Jimmy's sniveling or not.
Yeah, so it's not only that. It started with the fingers. He started with the fingers, then he moved to the fist. This man is
playing the tiny violin and then churning the invisible butter of resentment. Yeah.
And then hit him with the sniveling.
Sniveling. I do what I want. I'm rich.
That's right. He's going to save us a lot of time and just said that. We got Jimmy.
Oh, we have another.
Jimmy.
Let's go.
And it isn't at the end of the day all tailored around whether Jimmy is sniveling or not.
Oh, God.
It's
such a boss laugh.
I have to look that word up in the dictionary. I don't know that I've ever sniveled. Do you ever remember me sniveling?
Wow. So in my mind, so this, like Big Dog, I feel like we should define the vocabulary word so we fully understand what we're talking about. A snivel, okay, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
cry and sniff in a feeble or fretful way, right? So like you're almost trying to say stuff, but you can't get it out. And so you end up sniffling your words, and it's big little dog energy, I suppose. Yes. Yeah.
Do you see how Jimmy Johnson is completely unbothered because he knows he can step 10 feet out of that door to his left and get on a boat? That is all that man cares about in this world.
It feels
Jerry Jones
boat it just, access. Yeah.
It feels weird for him to suggest that he's sniveling when I think Jimmy is already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's probably in the College Football Hall of Fame. Like all the career honors that anybody could want. Like getting in a Cowboys Ring of Honor, maybe it's something that he wants, but it's not gonna like go above the things that he's already achieved. It feels weird. And also, the guy who asked the question, does he still work for Jerry?
Like,
I feel like Jerry agreed to have that question asked, but like that's the Jerry Jones Network, I assume.
Well, yeah, this ain't all constructed around you, son. We can just go ahead. And I can find another person to ask me questions.
Yeah, I ran Jimmy Johnson off. You think I'm gonna hold on to a dude?
You can go snivel over there.
Yeah,
go snivel.
Sniveling.
The interviewer was trying to escalate his way into job security. And I don't know if he succeeded.
0%.
I like it. I like how you.
So we should say to our audience, we're on a very long break for like 2.5 weeks, Alabaster. Is that right?
Oh, really?
Until August 24th. We'll see you August 24th.
All right. August 24th, we will be sniveling.
Until then.
Sniveling until then.
Did we leave them with a good final show? Was this? I think so.
I feel like we absolutely succeeded in teaching people that dude's last name means nut tree.
Yeah. Don't show me your tiny pools, New York.